Good afternoon. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the magical Isle of Vashon. And my greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who are in Alaska. And I am hopeful that I have not screwed up the panel because my friend, colleague, and Cambridge classmate, among many other titles that he has, is going to be calling in a few minutes to see if we can get him on the board to talk about the Soviet Arctic. And in also, my greetings go out to all of Captain Joe's people from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden on the other, and in particular to my Stockholm family who are coming to America for at least a six-month sabbatical at the beginning of 2024. So I will have them here rather than all the way in Sweden for at least 6 months, and that will just warm the cockles of this black captain's heart. On the binnacle list today, we have some improvements. We have no one who has left the binnacle list in the unapproved fashion, sewed up in his or her hammock with the last stitch through the nose. Does everybody know that particular story? I will tell it sometime about how sailors are sewed up into their hammock with the last stitch through their nose to make sure that they have indeed crossed the bar. And so all of you who are on the binnacle list, you are, as always, in the palm of my hand and are, as always, it is my hope and my wish, my desire and my command that you continue to follow the instructions of your medical practitioner so that you will leave the binnacle list and go back to full duty and ready to answer the call when the call goes out for sail stations. So when Captain Professor Dr. Brigham calls, and here he is, we're going to give this a try and see if we can make this work. Lawson, are you with me?
I am.
Lawson, are you with me now?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me? It's clear.
Lawson, are you with me now?
I don't know if you can hear me. I hear you.
I can hear you loud and clear, so let's carry on.
Very good.
All right. So I did not screw it up, even though Captain O'Brien is not with me. And it is always a pleasure to be able to spend some time with Dr. and Captain and Professor Lawson Brigham, who is also my classmate in Cambridge. We did our master's degree program together. And I even rescued Lawson once, and maybe we'll get to that point. So good morning to you, Captain Brigham, and let me ask you, first of all, to give a short biography which would include the ships that you commanded. I know the answer to that, but I have a particular reason for you to mention the polar icebreaker that you commanded. Go ahead.
Thank you, Captain Brigham, for me to be online. Yes, I'm a graduate of the Coast Guard Academy with the class of 1970, and during my career I had a chance to serve on six ships, four of which I was the captain. And I was a captain of a small patrol boat, the Point Steele, a small Great Lakes icebreaker, the Mobile Bay, a what the Coast Guard calls a medium endurance cutter, a 270-foot cutter, the Escanaba, out of Boston, Massachusetts. And then at the end of my career, I was captain of the polar icebreaker Polar Sea, operating out of Seattle and sailing to both ends of the world on several Arctic expeditions, one to the North Pole and two trips to the Antarctic. I've had an opportunity to sail 8 times to Antarctica, 6 on Coast Guard icebreakers in my career, and 2 actually on a cruise ship, 2 cruise ships of Holland America. I also served in my Coast Guard career several times at Coast Guard headquarters, and was also a faculty member at the Coast Guard Academy teaching oceanography and chemistry. In my second career, I've been a researcher, an Arctic scientist and researcher at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, and also here at the University of Alaska Fairbanks for the last 15 years. And I'm studying climate change and sea ice and marine transportation at the top of the world. I also spent some time at Captain Joe's and my alma mater, the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. I'm on a sailing council at the Academy, but also I'm a research fellow and affiliated with our small Center for Arctic Study and Policy at the Coast Guard Academy. I live in outside of Anchorage today in Eagle River.
So I make no secret of and will proclaim it every opportunity I get to tell people who are interested in the Arctic and in particular the Soviet Arctic that you know more about it than anybody else that I know. I asked you to mention the ships that you commanded in particular Polar Sea because there was an opportunity for you and me when we were working together in Coast Guard headquarters when I was the ice boss for Commandant Jim Gracie to move Polar Sea from one side of the continent to the other, and we decided to move her across the Northwest Passage. Do you remember any of that, Lawson?
I do, Captain Joe. It was, 1985,
yes.
I think.
Yes, it was.
And the Polar Star, Polar Sea, my ship-to-be,
correct.
The Polar Sea went westbound through the Northwest Passage from, they were operating, I think, Thule, Greenland, and then had to get back to Seattle, so the shortest distance really is through the Canadian Arctic Archipelago and through Bering Strait and then down to Seattle. That's the shortest route. The other route, you'd have to go through all the way down the Panama Canal and around and then back to Seattle, and that's at least 3 times longer. And so the ship caused some controversy, but we had organized in the Ice Operations Division for several Canadian Coast Guard captains to be aboard so they could observe the whole operation. But nonetheless, the media in Canada caused somewhat of a kerfuffle about the voyage, but we certainly weren't testing Canada's sovereignty or whatever. We were just making a transit across in collaboration then with our Canadian Coast Guard colleagues.
So I bring this up because I felt that it would not be appropriate for me to join that expedition and make the transit myself. I was fending off the Secretary of State, and I remember well one meeting that I had with the Commandant in which he said, Captain Joe, what have you gotten me into this time? And so I sent you as my representative on that particular voyage, not knowing then, neither of us knew then, that you would not too far in the far distant future would become captain in Polar Sea. So you were part of that expedition with some of our Canadian Coast Guard icebreaker captains. And was Tom Pullen still, did he make that trip? I don't remember that.
I don't remember, but I don't think so. One of the more experienced Canadian Coast Guard captains who was then well retired, but I don't think he was aboard. I'm trying to think who was the captain of the polar sea was maybe Holland. No, it wasn't Holland. Howland. I can't remember his name.
Well, anyway, our not only do our eyes go dim sometimes, but our memory grows dim. So let's move on to today, Lawson. And today I have in front of me what is the going to be our book this week, which is your book, The Soviet Maritime Arctic, edited by Lawson W. Brigham. And it was originally written in 1990, and it was published by an offshoot of the Cambridge University Press, which is a much-loved institution to both you and me. And it was, and one of the people that you were involved with at that time, again, not knowing, I think, that we were going to be together in Cambridge later, after we were together in Washington, with people like Dr. Bernard Stonehouse and Bill Barr. And I just went through the list of all of the people that you had collected for that book, and I my eyes did grow dim because almost many of them are no longer with us. Bernard, of course, is gone not too long ago. And you left me a wonderful experience, a wonderful writing when you wrote in the book for me. And, of course, the books which are written in by their authors are some of the treasures of my life. So my question to you right now is, are you working on an update to the Soviet Maritime Arctic, or are you writing maybe a separate book? Because there's a lot has happened since you put together the Soviet Maritime Arctic, and in particular with the Russians and the Chinese, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But I want your answer on the question
The book. I am. I'm writing a paper first. Well, I'm assembling material to write a single-author book this time on the Russian Maritime Arctic, of course, no longer the Soviet Arctic. It's the Russian Federation Arctic, and focusing on the whole of the length of the Russian Arctic, because the Northern Sea Route is only part of it from Karagate east to the Bering Strait. So the Barents Sea and all the definitions of the Northern Sea Route are, it doesn't include the Barents Sea, and certainly Murmansk and all of these places are important places for the Russian Arctic. Yeah, a dramatic change from the time. The edited book was a product of my stay at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. I won a fellowship on marine policy, and so they had at the time, this policy center, a relationship with the Soviet Union through the World Ocean Institute in Moscow. And so we visited there. I corralled a couple then Soviet authors to contribute it to this unusual book. And out it came in 1990, 1991. But today, there's been dramatic change in the Russian North because of the development of oil and gas, particularly gas and LNG out of a new port called facility and port called Sabetta in the Ob Estuary. So a lot has changed. The military establishments are enhanced in the Russian Arctic, but primarily the commercial use of the Northern Sea Route and the whole of the region has increased, at least with the relationship to Arctic resource development in the Russian Arctic.
Are you concerned about the increasing belligerence of the Russian political system? And I'd like you to comment briefly, Captain, briefly, on both your feelings about it in the Arctic and then the vulnerability of the Russian membership in the Antarctic Treaty, which of course is very, very close to my heart because of my relationship with Dr. John Heap and with Tucker Scully.
Well, the first thing is, sure, that we have an issue at the top of the world because the seven other Arctic states, other than Russia, all have paused the work of the Arctic Council, the Arctic Council in a governmental form of the eight Arctic states over the last quarter of a century, very, very successful with engagement of Russia along with the seven other Arctic states. So, sure, it's a real problem for cooperation on not only military security, but the important parts of environmental security and marine safety, environmental protection, and a whole host of issues. So the and the buildup of the military apparatus in the Russian Arctic also is of great concern. One of the greatest changes, most important unintended consequences of Ukraine and the invasion by Russia is that soon, when Sweden joins NATO, seven of the eight Arctic states, excluding Russia, will be members of NATO and aligned. As far as the Antarctic is concerned, I don't think there's any chance that any country could be easily removed from the Antarctic Treaty, primarily because the Russians and Chinese and other countries all contribute their stations, their observing data, and are really cooperative down in the South. There are some challenges and differences of opinion on marine protected areas and some ocean issues. But nonetheless, the Antarctic Treaty is pretty secure. It would take, I don't know what it would take to remove somebody. Even as we know, during the war between Argentina and UK over the Falklands back in 1982, both countries still met in the Antarctic Treaty meetings and cooperated on Antarctic issues. So I personally don't think there's a chance of any removal or any problem for the Russians in the Antarctic Treaty. But for all the other organizations, particularly the Arctic Council and Arctic affairs, there is a real challenge for cooperation.
What do you see as the evolution of development in the Arctic with the incursion of the Chinese, and in particular the Chinese building ever more capable ice-strengthened ships?
Well, I think there's no chance, of course. China's taken over the Arctic at all. They're not an Arctic state, even though they call themselves near Arctic. Their interest is certainly natural resources, but if you're trying to get at the natural resources at the top of the world, you must deal with the coastal states, or at least the Arctic states, to bring ships in and carry those resources out. I don't personally have a concern. It's part of a global economic and natural resource trade. The Chinese, as we speak, have their oceanographic and polar research vessel nearing the North Pole, should reach in the next couple of days, I guess. They might even meet a French tourist ship at the North Pole, which will be intriguing. So they're out in the Arctic Ocean. They're conducting world-class science along with the U.S. Coast Guard cutter Healy and other polar ships of various countries out in the Arctic Ocean. The concern more of China in the Arctic is whatever China's relationship is with the Russian Federation, and the two of them teaming up in the Arctic, it may be more of a challenging than just thinking about China alone in the Arctic. So I'll just leave it at that, I think.
So leaving it at that, let us move ourselves, you and me, together, an ample movement that would be, but moving you and me together over to our own much-loved service and our presence in the Arctic. And you and I are sea daddies to Healy, and she is our presence in the Arctic. She's working up north of 77 North right this very minute. They've got people out on the ice doing all sorts of really great scientific work, and that's what we intended when we created the design parameters for her. And so at the same time, We created what you and I know as the Red Book, which is the Polar Icebreaker Requirements Study. And at that time, in the Red Book and in my conversations with, in particular, Admiral Venske and Admiral Gracie, the commandant, warned then that we needed to be thinking ahead. Little did we know that we would be thinking ahead 30 years, and we still do not have anything except this box that we have built or are building, which may or may not be part of the next icebreaker. So you and I had agreed when we talked about the parameters for this broadcast that we would not get into a great deal of discussion about our concern about what's going on. However, because you and I worked together to create the concept that became Healy, I'd like to know your thinking about what is being called PSC-1, Polar Sentinel, and I am hopeful that the commandant will change the name and bring her up to being a proper icebreaker name. Give me your thoughts on PSC-1.
Well, the PSC, the Polar Security Cutter, is the new four-year, I guess, three-plus-year-old name for polar icebreakers. In many ways, I would argue, better express what the ships are. The problem over three or four decades has always been the Office of Management and Budget and thinking that, well, the United States doesn't have a marine transport system like the Russians and Northern Sea Route, that we don't need escort icebreakers. But I think overall, everyone misinterpreted what a polar icebreaker is. Of course, a polar icebreaker is as a Coast Guard cutter, is a naval ship of the U.S. It's a law enforcement ship. It performs many, many functions, response, search and rescue, environmental pollution response, etc. But, of course, it can break ice and operate in polar waters, both ends of the world, break ice into McMurdo and Antarctica. So the new designation emphasizes security and maybe not transport or transportation, but captures what maybe in many better ways. And of course, the ships I missed all should and will conduct science and research, polar research for under U.S. interests. So the new ships, whenever they come out, there's budget now for three ships now, and so these icebreakers will be the largest ships in the history of the Coast Guard by tonnage and size and length, and they should be able to deploy in all seasons anywhere in the polar regions we wish to sail. They do represent, of course, and have always represented in our day, you on the good ship Northwind and me on the Polar Sea, the sovereign presence of the United States wherever we go. And so hugely important for our national interests at both ends of the world. And we likely should have had them sooner, but nonetheless, the program marches on to hopefully bring these ships on into service in the next couple of years.
It will be within your lifetime. It may well not be within mine. But should that happen, I will, along with you, accept an invitation to the commissioning ceremony of PSC-1. Hopefully it will have, for me anyway, a WAGB designation and will carry one of the wind class names, but I think maybe I am peeing up a slack halyard on that one. So we're going to move quickly, and we don't have much time left, but I want to talk about something that is really close to my heart and to yours, and that's the Academy, and in particular, the SAIL training program, which I know you are very much involved with. So give me a few groups on that, please, Captain.
SAIL training at the Coast Guard Academy has been with our school since it was named the Revenue Cutter School back in the late 1800s. 1877, we took our first cadets aboard a series of sailing ships. And today, of course, we sail, the cadets all sail aboard the square rigger, the Coast Guard cutter Eagle. But the program is much broader and much better and sounder than in our days at the Academy as cadets. The waterfront program for the freshmen or the fourth class cadets is very sound, teaching 101 sailing, having the cadets for most of the summer on the waterfront, sailing boats, driving small power boats, etc. And what has changed since our days, every second class cadet, essentially the juniors in their summer, sail aboard a small sail training vessel called L-44. It's a sloop, it's like a small yacht, but it's a training vessel. And six or seven cadets, along with a safety officer, sail for 2 weeks out and around to New England waters, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, Woods Hole, Newport, etc., and learn firsthand about how to sail and be aboard a small boat, a small sailing training vessel. So the today's program is very robust with 101 sailing, sailing aboard this small training vessel, and also spending first summer and your second summer aboard the cutter Eagle. So I believe, and all of these experiences at sea, under sail, are tied to the leadership development program at the Academy, more formalized program called the Leader Development Program. And each of these experiences in small boats tie very directly to the program of that's leadership, essentially focused on leadership at sea.
So you and I never have enough time, and I've only got 2 minutes left on the clock before it is two bells of the afternoon watch. And I want to use that time by asking you what is next for Captain Dr. Professor Brigham, along with this paper that you're writing, which I hope will morph into a full-scale book, which I will then push here as the book for that week. And so what's next for you, Lawson?
Well, I'm just working on some research papers, one on the Northwest Passage and the very few ships, only about 350 vessels that have actually made a transarctic voyage through the Northwest Passage. I'm doing this with our buddy and our friend from Cambridge, Bob Headland, analyzing the very few vessels that have actually been through the Northwest Passage. I'm also working on this paper, as you mentioned, for the Wilson Center. It's called a Kenyan Cable, named after one of the famous ambassadors to Russia. And it focuses on the Northern Sea Route and the promise, at least for destinational traffic carrying resources out of the Russian Arctic. But most of my work is related to marine safety, environmental protection. I'm working on issues related to extending the POLA code, the International Maritime Organization code of rules and regulations for ships going south and north, and enhancing various elements of the code and writing about them with some colleagues from the NGO community. So, personally, my wife and I will move potentially to out of Alaska to a coastal site somewhere, maybe in North Carolina, along near Wilmington, Wrightsville Beach, or even perhaps on the other coast, down in the coast of Oregon. So we haven't decided yet where to move to, but we'll no doubt be attached to some university wherever I go, either Oregon State or Duke University on the East Coast, perhaps.
So we have indeed come to the end of our time far too quickly. And Lawson, I will negotiate with you when you can come on with me again. And that will be soon because we have a lot yet to talk about. But it is time yet once again and far too quickly for me to announce that we never say goodbye. We say
thank you very much for having me.
Right. And you're always welcome here with me. And I didn't get to tell the story of my rescuing you on a Christmas day, but that'll wait for the next time.
Wait for the next time.
Yes. So this is your Captain Joe. And as always, I remain on station and watching properly and touching fingertips with my shipmates all over the world. Everybody take care. You remain, as always, in the palm of my hand.